Hey, how's it going? Welcome to the Football Diary podcast. We've lost another English great this week in Terry Venables, who tragically died at the age of 80. And I know these guys probably won't remember him too much from his playing career or his managerial career, but I think for many people of my vintage who were born in the 80s, he was kind of that manager who got you into the England team and invested in them for the first time, because they didn't qualify for tournaments until he came along in my childhood anyway. And clearly, Euro 96 is kind of indelible in people's minds. And I think that, plus obviously his stints at Barcelona and of course at Tottenham, will kind of leave many fans really mourning his loss this weekend. So from the Football Diary podcast, we wish his family all the best at this really difficult time, a sad loss to the game. And his Tottenham team played one of the kind of outstanding games of the weekend as well, with a loss against Aston Villa, which I'll talk to Miles about first of all to kick us off for the show, because Spurs are a bit threadbare, it's fair to say, but Aston Villa took full advantage of that. And say it quietly, they move into the top four. What does that mean, man? I mean, it's a great performance, first of all, right?
Yeah, don't say it quietly. Say it from the rooftops, mate. Let people know Aston Villa are here and we are competing in that top four. That's the aim. And I think this result goes a long way towards pushing us towards that. We know how imperious Aston Villa have been at home this season, but the big away days, we've struggled slightly. Obviously, we had the heavy loss to Newcastle on the opening day of the season. Liverpool, obviously, we lost to at Anfield. So we needed a statement win away from home, and Three Point Lane, as it's becoming known to us, provided that. It's excellent for the Villa to get this win, moving above Tottenham in the league, who many kind of have been clamouring over this season. Obviously, Postecoglou won Manager of the Month for the first 3 months of the season, which, yes, they've done well, but come on. Let's be honest. He's nowhere near as good as Unai Emery. And it's phenomenal seeing the development of his side. And this game was a massive statement for that.
Well, I think it was fascinating tactically to see two managers play what's been billed as the Battle of the High Lines. I think many of us expected to see the game played in the centre circle pretty much. But joking aside, Dave, it was an impressively executed high line from Villa that kind of almost won it in some ways, because the amount of time Spurs got caught offside, I believe, was a record for a Premier League game. Goals disallowed, obviously, for that as well. The execution of that defensive strictness was kind of key, really, to this game plan coming off for Villa, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely evidence of Villa improving their high line and their structure in defence. We saw it early on in the season. There were times where they did get caught out on the break. We saw it against Forest recently as well in that game where they obviously dropped points. But there looks like it's starting to click a little bit more consistently now. And obviously we saw a hat-trick of goals from Son, disallowed goals at that. But you're right, to be honest, they really contained Spurs. I think they had to ride a little bit of wave of pressure in that first sort of 35, 40 minutes where Spurs really were in the ascendancy and looked full of confidence, you know, even without all the players that they're missing. They actually did really well. It looked like they'd be the more likely to kind of go on. But impressively, Villa held out and were able to sort of, you know, hold on in that pressure, in that time of pressure, and they actually got a goal at a pivotal time, and it really just swung the momentum completely. Villa looked the more likely then to, you know, to really grow into the game, which they did do.
Yeah, that goal as well from Pau Torres, Miles, as Dave was saying, like the timing of it was perfect. But I kind of think that they were knocking on the door anyway. They had a goal fractionally disallowed for offside from Ollie Watkins. And he was always getting in those positions, wasn't he? His positional play was superb in this game. But yeah, that header from Pau Torres, crucial time in, and probably the momentum builder for going into the second half as well.
Yeah, you absolutely need that, because Dave is right. Spurs were definitely on top in that first half. And there were a few things that just upset their rhythm. Obviously, the Spurs fans are massively aggrieved by the Matty Cash challenge on Bentancur. Never a red for me. Very clear yellow card. And it's unfortunate the player goes off injured. But I think that disrupted the flow of Spurs in the first half quite heavily. And then, obviously, the goal just before half-time is massive. And it shows the quality we've got from set pieces. Because, OK, Tottenham are missing their centre-backs, which you'd imagine would try and deal with a ball into the box like that. But it's inch perfect from Douglas Luiz. Like, it's absolutely fantastic. And Torres does very well to finish it. But it was just a sign of how well-organised Villa are, how prepared they are for everything. Like, you mentioned that high line. The amount of people that are saying Spurs are unlucky because Son had three goals disallowed for offside. It's not bad luck. That's just excellent defending. It shows a Villa defensive line who are resilient and willing to hold that high line and are really organised in doing it. Here's a stat for you. Since Unai Emery came in at Aston Villa, Liverpool are the second highest team in the Premier League for catching their opponent offside. They've done it 98 times. Yeah?
Wow.
Aston Villa are top of that with 168. It's a really deliberate play. That's not a fluke. It's not unlucky for Spurs. It's just methodical defending from Aston Villa. And I think the fact that we are able to implement that so well at the back means we're also quite prepared for how to tackle that going forward. And okay, Watkins has one disallowed because his toenail was off in the first half. And that is a shame. But then if you look, the free kick was a perfect example. We're aware of where that defensive line is going to sit and we know how to counter that. And that's excellent from us. Like the fact that we are able to turn our own strength in defence into a tactic when we're attacking, superb. Yeah. It just shows that, yes, Postecoglou is doing a good job at Tottenham. And of course, he was hamstrung by injuries in this game. But there's a difference between a man manager and a tactician. And we know which one Emery is. Absolutely. Mm. In fact, he's probably both, if we're totally honest. The improvement of some of these players is huge. And there's a few more we could talk about today, I guess.
Well, I just want to kind of say to Ange Postecoglou as well, he's had weird criticism lately from other channels and from yourself as well. You're not overly impressed with him. I think he's a lot of hype about how he does man manage. But I think to his credit, he got his Spurs team playing well better than I thought they would with the team they had, definitely. And they had a go, which I think Spurs fans appreciate the team losing in that fashion rather than the way Antonio Conte might have set up last season, for example. If he had this deck of players at his disposal, I think they just had backs to the wall and just defended deeply and just let Villa come at them. But I think that the Spurs actually played it quite well. But my question to you about Villa again, just to pick a bit deeper, is even things like kind of the subs that was made at the right time and players were on yellows and you could sense that, yeah, they were kind of treading a tightrope here, like Matty Cash, like you say. I feel like all of that was part of this tactical discussion and decision that Emery's getting right frequently now, you know? And this game is a big game for Spurs and for Villa. And he got it spot on. Despite, you know, a real onslaught from Spurs at times, he stayed resolute and made those decisions, those right calls at the right time. That's really encouraging.
Absolutely. And that's why we'll be in this sort of position come the end of the season as well, because the depth of this squad and the way Emery's managing it is fantastic. Spurs fans can complain all they like about the amount of injuries they had. Let's not forget, we've got Tyrone Mings out for the season. Emi Buendia, who was our record signing not long ago, out for the season. Ramsey and Moreno have been out for most of the season. They were our left-hand side last season. So we've faced that too. But all of a sudden, we've built a really strong squad and we're getting the best out of players. You look at Leon Bailey. Leon Bailey's got more goal contributions per 90 minutes than anyone in the Premier League so far this season. That's outstanding for considering where he was last year. The impact he's able to have off the bench is superb. And he looked brilliant again in this game when he came on. Yuri Tielemans is finally getting some match fitness and he's starting to click with the team. That pass for Watkins' goal is just superb. Yeah. And the way he's able to kind of pick that penetrating pass in the final third, Villa needs someone that can do that, because a lot of the time, you've got Luiz dropping a bit deeper to dictate the play. McGinn's very direct and running with the ball. But having Tielemans as that extra option who can find the ball in to get Watkins behind the defensive line, that's huge. So the fact that we've got some of these players returning to fitness, we've got a squad with that kind of depth. Yes, there's areas we still need to address. And I think that will be done in January, now that we're kind of seeing our league position. But Emery's managing this squad superbly. And okay, depending on how deep we go into Europe, that might start to affect us throughout the season compared to a team like Spurs who don't have European football. I don't know. I just feel so confident with the way that Emery's tackling these kind of problems. And it'll be interesting to see where we're in 3 weeks, because, all right, we've got Bournemouth away next. Have to win that game. Absolutely have to. And then it's City and Arsenal at home. That's huge. We've finally taken points off someone that you'd say is a rival for the top four. Absolutely. I think Arsenal and City would probably pull away from us by the end of the season. But at this stage, you've got to show that you're competing at that level. So who knows? There'll be two massive games for us coming up.
Yeah, huge. Dave, I don't know how much of a level head Miles could keep if I ask about top four chances long term. So I'll ask you instead, because the top four actually is wide open in terms of the points gap between first and even sort of United in sixth. Feels like touching distance still. form team of the league, obviously.
Get a grip.
But Villa are 2 points off the top, you know, 1 point off champions Man City. And as Miles was saying, if the games against those big teams go their way, dare we even think about top four, let alone a title challenge, Dave? Or is that optimistic even for Miles?
I think a title challenge is a bit much to ask, and I think definitely a bit too much soon. I think Villa fans, you know, they're ecstatic with the way they play and their progression, you know, ever since Gerrard left is nothing short of unbelievable, really. I think what is especially important is that they actually get a lot of their players who have got off, so they put these knocks and injuries up and get back fit, because I think they are a little bit short, especially in the attacking areas at the minute. Obviously, Zaniolo just picked up that injury. They can get Ramsey back. You know, the kind of form that he was in before he got injured was, you know, he was getting tired for England and he was definitely making a case for himself there. So if they can get these players back fit and give them more options in the squad, because, you know, the fixture list is just so congested and it's going to get, you know, even more ridiculous than we know it is at around Christmas time. So certainly if they can make a case for that top four, top five, you know, a position there, then they'll be over the moon with that.
Just on that, worth pointing out that we're now 35 Premier League games into 2023. So that's nearly a full season's worth. This year, Aston Villa would be third. 35 games, 71 points, the same as Arsenal. Like, that stat just gets more and more impressive the further you get through a year, obviously, because we're now talking about what is a good enough sample size to look like a full season. So can Aston Villa finish in the top four this season? Well, yeah. Because across the last 35 games, we've got 4 more points than Liverpool. Like, that's incredible. We've had the same amount of points as Arsenal, who we're considering title challengers. So we're keeping pace with these excellent teams. So I don't think we're title challengers. Of course not. That would be ridiculous. Top four is probably further than I thought we would be aiming this season. But now, 13 games in, well, of course we are. We're a much better side than most of the teams below us. Can you see anyone catching us right now? We were a better side than Tottenham, I believe. We're certainly better than Man United. All right, Newcastle might get into gear at some point, but I think we're already forming a bit of a gap right now. I'll take that all day.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of it will depend on how teams manage their injury crises, I think, because every team will have one at some point. I think it's just the nature of how relentless football's been for the last 12 months. Well, more like 2 to 3 years, really, since COVID. It's been a backlog of games, one after the other, season after season. Mm. Tottenham are finding that at the minute. They're struggling. I don't think they'll be too concerned by their run of form, because I do think they can turn it around. How they sort of deal without Maddison long term is going to be the big one. But they can't really have too many complaints, because, like I say, so many teams are going through it. Newcastle being another prime example. They're still remaining competitive in their league position. And the game I'll move on to next, Dave, is they're beating Chelsea 4-1 at home, which is always key for Newcastle, isn't it? But I feel like the rotation of Newcastle's squad, the shuffling of their deck, is such a remarkable asset of Eddie Howe, and how he gets players into that team and integrated so well. Players you've perhaps never heard of. Young players are literally being thrown into action for the first time. You know, executing the plan really flawlessly almost. Now, I know Chelsea shot themselves in the foot on regular occasions throughout this game and prove what a Jekyll and Hyde side they can be. But let's not take anything away from Newcastle. They're still very much in a European hunt, aren't they?
No doubt. And I thought it was really impressive the way they've actually managed this game. Like you mentioned, obviously Chelsea did make a few mistakes, but that Newcastle front line has shown just how potent they are. And obviously it's nice to see Isak back in there. He's not played a great deal of minutes recently and, you know, making an impact straight away. But just in the way that they actually played the game, I thought Chelsea struggled with their movement and the space that they really actually utilised in behind their defence. I think Chelsea have actually looked quite good defensively so far this season. So I think to do that's quite impressive in itself. But like you mentioned, some of the players that have come in and really impose themselves on games, like Lewis Miley, 17 years of age, is absolutely incredible. He's obviously hailed as a massive talent. And
what a pass for Isak's goal as well.
Oh, brilliant, out of this world. And it's really great to see that kind of talent coming in into the league. And obviously there's a few young talents who we'll talk a little bit about. And a few other games, you know, this weekend have come in and been able to make make a statement, and it's just wonderful to see, because we want to see this young talent getting, you know, getting these opportunities. So for him to come in and take his chance was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, a few standout performances from Newcastle. As I say, Chelsea didn't do themselves many favours, but looking at Newcastle's goals as well, I feel like that's a real testament to how well-drilled the team is, how tactically astute the players are when they score goals, how kind of technically good they are. And I said Isak's goal was great. Miley's pass through to him was superb. They find each other, don't they, quite well. And they, I think as a team, they look like a really slick unit. No matter who comes in at the minute, they seem to be coached into a system that's working really well.
Yeah, and it's interesting, isn't it? Because we've talked quite a few times this season about the impact of Anthony Gordon. Yeah. I think we all ummed and ahed over that transfer when it happened in January, that it seemed like a lot of money and we weren't sure whether we were really seeing a player that was at that level yet. And the summer obviously was huge for him. He was instrumental in England's success over the summer. And then he started the season with that same sort of venom, and he's made himself one of the first names on the team sheet. So for him to get a goal in a game like this as well and continue that form, that's excellent. Dave's right in pointing out Isak. I wonder how many strikers are better than Isak in the league right now. If he stays fit and is consistent, Newcastle have got such a good player on their hands there.
Yeah.
And when you're building something, you want those young talents that are a step above everyone else to build everything around, because it's not a quick fix. They've not done the inevitable kind of splash cash Galactico style signings. They've brought in two players that Eddie Howe has worked really closely with, and he's getting the best out of them at an early age, which suggests their ceiling's really, really high. So yeah, huge win for Newcastle. When if you think about the scenes after in their last game, when Trippier's kind of arguing with the fans about the amount of injuries they've got, and then Chelsea, it looked like they were picking up some momentum from some big results themselves, and they dispatched them really comfortably here. Like, you're right, Chelsea helped them. It's always helpful when you get your captain sent off in quite a silly fashion, and when Thiago Silva realises he's 39. But generally speaking, you've got to give Newcastle all the credit.
Yeah, I think they played brilliantly. And I was going to say, Dave, for Anthony Gordon as well, I think he's a shout for an England start at some point, you know, just to experiment. We've not got many games left before the Euros. And I think Scotland are circling around him as well, and rightly so. He's such a talented player. But I think in his position, England are still a little bit uncertain. Like, it's still up for grabs. There's players that are out of form in that position. Do you think he's got a chance with England? And do you think he's as good as the players that are already playing there for them?
I mean, coincidentally, they're probably the two Englishmen that are most in form were both playing in this game, who are playing that sort of inside left, or can play, you know, either side. And that's Anthony Gordon and Raheem Sterling, who both, you know, performed excellently of late. And for me, I think they've got to be in with a shout. I don't see how they can't, because especially the players that are in there at the minute, in terms of, we mentioned over the weekend that Jack Grealish has not particularly looked himself of late. Either Rashford, who's been out of sorts for a long, you know, for the best part of the majority of the season. So I don't think you can look past them. I think it's hard to, really. Well, but it's just about when they get that opportunity. I think the strange one for me is that Southgate obviously mentioned about, you know, it's very close to a squad call-up, but I think there's only one more window before
yeah,
the competition.
Just in March, so, I think. Yeah.
Can I weigh in and just say one for the socials then, Mike? You're saying Anthony Gordon in for a shout of the England squad. I'm saying Anthony Gordon in for a shout of being Dave's twin brother. Can you ask anyone that's watching? Someone agree with me, because me and Mike have argued over this. Anthony Gordon is Dave's doppelganger.
I resisted the urge to compare them, to be fair, but do you know what? Sometimes you can see it. You see a young Dave is a spit of Anthony Gordon.
So what are we saying?
I'd take him at the moment. On current form, yeah. I don't see why you can't. And I think there are enough players that are contentious at the moment. Like, Rashford's playing on the left still. That's always going to happen. And I don't mind taking Rashford because of his versatility. You could always put him up front if you needed to. But I like Gordon. I think he's really come on a long way under Eddie Howe, and you want players that are that kind of hungry. And he's shown that he's prepared for tournaments over the summer as well. So why not?
I think the one thing that he has got going for him as well is definitely his intensity, not just on the ball, but off it. You know, he's shown that he's willing to be it for the team. And, you know, Eddie Howe has really brought him a lot on a long way, really, in terms of sort of defensively. He's looked on it for Newcastle this season, and that's definitely an area of his game that's improved.
I do worry it's too late, though. I think you're right. Having one camp left, I don't think he's going to try many new players by that. Maybe one or two, and maybe he'll be the lucky one. But you know what Southgate's like. I'm not sure we'll see him.
What's the question? Who do you drop?
Rashford.
Well, it looks like Rashford at the minute, doesn't it? Yeah. If you're going to put them in sort of ranking order of form and just general kind of demeanour at the minute, he seems the one that's dispensable to England, you know. And the energy that Gordon would bring would be infectious, I think.
Yeah.
Do you play for Scotland?
Well, why not? Him and Harvey Barnes on the wing.
Can you imagine? They've got a pretty good attacking midfield as it is, haven't they? But Newcastle, on their prospects as well, obviously, before the international break, they lost to Bournemouth, and we were saying how much of a blow that was. There were the scenes at the final whistle where Kieran Trippier was confronting fans, you know, and saying, you know, what do you expect? We've got all these injuries. So it begs the question, really, Miles, if when these players do come back, this team and this squad look suddenly a level above, doesn't it? And even with those injury problems, they're sitting in seventh place at the minute. And that's a competitive area of the league to be in. There and above, as we've just said, it's really tight. Is there any chance that they could make up that ground now? Or do you think it's that tight and that competitive that losing that momentum and those players has kind of hit them early and it's probably kind of irreversible?
It's difficult to call. It's definitely not too late. I mean, there's still a lot of the season left, obviously, and it feels inevitable that they'll do a lot in January, particularly to cover the centre and midfield. Now they know that Tonali's out for so long. So it depends on what they try and do after the Christmas break. But they've got a really tough sort of round of fixtures coming at the moment. Obviously, they've got the Champions League to contend with and a fixture against PSG midweek. And I don't know whether they would benefit from not having to worry about the league a little bit. If they could continue a run in the Champions League, that would be everything for them. And if they came sixth this season, which is very realistic, but got to the quarters or the semis of the Champions League, would you take that as a Newcastle fan?
Of course you would, yeah. I mean, that's a sign of progress for aspirations of a club like this, isn't it? I think if you can get momentum in the Champions League and raise your profile and get that all-important kind of revenue stream coming in, I think that makes all the difference for a growing club.
What does that mean if you don't qualify the next season, though? Is it kind of pointless? Like, when it was like Leicester, that was different because you never really saw Leicester cementing their place in the top four. They just wanted a good run in the Champions League. When you're Newcastle and you've got aspirations of being there consistently, well, you've qualified once now, you've got to qualify again. Yeah. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised. I've said from the start, I think that squad is too thin to compete with both. And I think we will see that. I think we've seen signs of it so far this season. It's harsh on them because I think they're an excellently coached side. But without big investment in January, it's one or the other. And I have a feeling that they'll get out of that Champions League group. And then all of a sudden, the league will take a bit of a back burner.
Yeah, it does feel sort of either or for them, doesn't it, in terms of their limitations as a squad. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they manage that, if they can at all, and which one they prioritise. I mean, can they show prioritising at all? The squad is what it is, so they pick the players they've got available. So there's no rotation they can do, really, is there? But moving on to the game of the weekend, on paper at least, the lunchtime kickoff, which, you know, much to Jurgen Klopp's dismay, was Man City-Liverpool, which was a fascinating game. They always are. But it was a fairly dull 1-1 with a few flash points. And I'm more interested, Dave, in sort of getting your opinion on what this means for the league table now, because these are the two powerhouses, really, of the last decade. Liverpool have had a little bit of a resurgence of late because they dropped off after winning the title. But they look back to being a competing team again. They were definitely the equal of City, I think, pretty much on this day. But how do you see both teams' prospects, and who do you think will be the happiest out of the two with this 1-1 draw?
I definitely feel as though City will feel themselves those drop points. I think going into this game, they would have been the favourites. And that's no slight on Liverpool. I just think, particularly the way that this City team has kind of mould themselves over the last, you know, year to 18 months, you know, known as pretty much the best team in Europe, they will feel as though, especially at home, they should have taken 3 points. And I think on the basis of the game, they probably just edged it, probably had slightly the better chances. I think they'll probably feel a little bit of aggrieved with the disallowed goal. You know, you can give your thoughts on that in a minute, but I think in itself, there's a few players actually in that sitting team at the minute who aren't just quite quickly clicking, and it's just, I think a lot of people are forgetting that they're missing their best player in Kevin De Bruyne have been missing for him for a larger number of weeks. And I think it's definitely shown, particularly in games like this where it's not in a knife edge and you really need that moment of magic and quality just to open something up. And I think they have missed that. I think they've had the likes of obviously Foden and Grealish who've been trying to step in and kind of provide that sort of creativity. But they've definitely missed that service from De Bruyne into Haaland, and it's shown for me. I feel like it was calling out for a player of his quality in this game.
Yeah, City have been a bit unlucky really in this game, I think. I mean, they benefited from a mistake for the first goal for Erling Haaland, didn't they? Alisson not covering himself with glory there. But yeah, slightly unlucky, I guess, in some ways with the disallowed goal. Miles, was there much in that for you? I know these are kind of contentious decisions all season at the minute, and referees are having a hard time calling these really fine decisions like that. What did you make of it?
I think Alisson just had a really bad game, full stop. Like, he didn't look up to his normal standard. Like, let's not get it twisted. Alisson is one of the best goalkeepers in the world. Not the best, that's Emi Martinez. But in this game, it was like the pressure got to him a little bit, which is rare for a player of his kind of caliber and experience and what he's done with Liverpool. Like, he gifted the ball to Foden in the first half at one point, and he should have done better with that. And for the disallowed goal, I just think he was a bit weak. Like, it's frustrating because goalkeepers get so much protection in situations like that it was always going to be given as a foul, but it's not a foul. If a defending player jumps for the ball with an attacking player and that happens, no one's given a foul for that. No one.
True.
But because it's the goalkeeper, it's given. But hey-ho, it's one of those, isn't it? That I can't say it's contentious because it always happens. So it's not like it's particularly favourable of Liverpool. It's just always favourable of goalkeepers. And Liverpool, I thought, were good value for the draw in the end. Trent's goal was excellent. And I think he continued to kind of grow into that midfield role where he can advance forward and find the ball higher in the pitch when he is playing right back or not. That's great for him. And how many teams will get a point from the Etihad this year? Because they were about to break a record, weren't they, of the most consecutive home league wins that dates back, 130 years or something ridiculous. So it's a massive result for Liverpool, definitely. I don't think you can ever turn your nose up at a point at the Etihad, so fair play to them.
I get the feeling at this point of every season so far, in the last like 5 years especially, teams are sort of desperate to kind of stockpile points against City now, because they always go on this inevitable run after the new year, don't they? And go on this relentless march towards the title. Just when you feel like there's a little bit of a chink of a chance of a team making it a title challenge, City just don't stop winning in the new year. And there's a chance they could do that again, I guess, Dave, isn't there? Because they've got it in them. They've got a squad, like you say, that isn't at its full capacity yet. I still get the feeling I'm not seeing City at 100%. They're in third, fourth gear most games, and they're still where they are in the table. So it's still kind of ominous for some teams, isn't it, to see them doing that and seeing players like Jamie Doku as well coming in and, you know, playing seamlessly so well and adapting to a system in his own unique way as well.
Yeah, and like you mentioned there, I think we forget there's actually quite a few players in there that are still finding their way in this team. You mentioned Doku and obviously Mateus Nunes, who joined obviously in the summer, who just kind of, you know, trying to fit into this team and fit into the way of playing that Man City, you know, they orchestrate their game. And I think there's a lot to go for. Like you mentioned, particularly the last couple of seasons, they've really kicked on sort of, you know, from the midpoint of the season, with really found their groove. And I think it's just a matter of time before they do that, to be honest.
Well, we're talking about these teams, and we haven't even mentioned Arsenal climbing to the top either. And probably a good reason, because they didn't play that well either. But if you're Liverpool, are you looking at this now and thinking, this is the best chance we've had in a long time to actually challenge for the title? And I know you mentioned it in a recent podcast with friend of the pod, Chris, but you're getting the feeling now that the optimism from some Liverpool fans is kind of warranted, Miles.
I still don't really know where I put them come the end of the season, because I think they've pulled some results out of the bag that I wasn't expecting. There have been other games where I think they have been underwhelming. And I still don't think we've seen the best of that midfield yet. Szoboszlai obviously started the season really, really well. His stats suggest that he's kind of slowed that down a little bit, but I think his performance on the pitch still looked promising. I think you can look at McAllister and say that that's been a bit underwhelming so far. And through the course of the season, I wonder if they just regulate and actually they're top four contenders, and that's really good. Do I think they're in the title charge? I don't think they're as good as Arsenal or City. if we're totally honest. And I don't think that's a problem either. I think they're probably ahead in their development, considering where we thought they were going to be in the summer. Think about the midfield targets they missed out on as well, what Klopp clearly wanted to do. It's been successful so far. They probably won't be as fussed about their European venture come the end of the season. That might help them as well. But I still don't know if I know what Liverpool's level is yet. I've been impressed by them in a lot of games. But there's also been times where I've gone, yeah, that's more cut par for the course for this season, I think. So we'll see with them.
Yeah, title challenge, top four, top six, top seven, whatever you want to call it. It's wide open this season, isn't it? It's actually really entertaining. I think we looked at this weekend in particular as a weekend where there was so many games that had flashpoints and opportunities to kind of impress us or show us who was leading the way. I still don't think we're any clearer in that respect about who's on top and who's in a good position, really, apart from probably Aston Villa in your eyes. Another team I'm not really sure of, which I'll get your take on, Miles, quickly, if you can, in a nutshell almost, is West Ham, because they left it late, didn't they, to win with Mohamed Kudus making a real impact in the last 10 minutes of the game, including a last-minute winner from Suchek that Kudus was actually pivotal in, wasn't he? But he started this game, a rare start for Kudus, and what an impact he's had.
Yeah, absolutely. When you've got someone like Jarrod Bowen, who's been in such great form, particularly away from home this season, picking up injuries, that seems like a huge worry for West Ham. But they had a player ready-made to come in and kind of fill that role. It took them a long time to get going. You're right, Burnley were much the better side, particularly in the first half. And probably feel aggrieved that they didn't have a penalty early on. Jay Rodriguez scoring a penalty feels like the most retro thing to have happened this season. And the way that West Ham responded in that last 10 minutes, it seems inevitable when you've got a squad of that quality against a side like Burnley. It felt more like, okay, we've worn them down now. They've been the better side for 80 minutes, but we have got better players and that will show at some point. And I fear for Vincent Kompany that that's going to be the case throughout the season with Burnley. West Ham are such a funny team to watch because it feels like they should be right towards the top end of the table as well. It should be a top eight conversation with the squad that they've got and the money that they've spent over the last couple of years. And I never really know where to put them. Like, are West Ham good? Kudus definitely is good. And I think they will get a lot more out of him. He's a phenomenal player and I think his ceiling is so high. And I'm surprised, no offence to West Ham, and obviously they've had a very successful couple of years, I'm surprised he ended up there. But they've got to make the most of that. And I'm not sure they're doing that yet.
Well, they're ninth in the table, which, again, it's one of those stats I look at and think, are they really ninth in the table? But yeah, only a couple of points off Brighton in eighth. So you talk about top eight conversation. They're in the top eight conversation, mate. They're really close to it. And I mentioned United, Dave. They're 4 points off the form team in the Premier League, Manchester United. A couple of points to take from United's 3-0 win over Everton. I mean, first of all, it was completely something we didn't expect, beating Everton after what they've been going through with their points deduction and the protests and the atmosphere inside Goodison. But first of all, Alejandro Garnacho's goal, beautiful, wasn't it? It's like a chef's kiss moment. I don't think technically I've seen many goals, if any, especially overhead kicks, that complete. His shape and everything was just amazing, wasn't it?
I mean, it's a goal in a million, isn't it? And if, you know, if you try that 1,000 times, how many times do you get anywhere near even close to the goal, to the top corner even?
I can tell you.
It's just ridiculous.
I can tell you the answer to that, Dave, because the XG was 0.08. So in 1,000, he would have scored it 80 times. How's that?
Yeah, it was a great goal. I mean, technically, I can't fault it particularly, can you? I mean, it was pretty much in the top corner, wasn't it?
I think he did Dallo justice by giving him an assist, to be fair. I thought that was incredible. Dallo actually managed to get an assist from that cross. You know, just the way he plucked it out of the air. I mean, I saw a photo on social media, I think, of it kind of put up against the Rooney one, and just the actual sort of body position he was in was, you know, immaculately similar to that. And
less of a shin, though.
I think it's definitely one of those moments in football where you just not got to take it for granted. And just the amount of times I've replayed that and watched it over, and just you're looking at, you know, a different point of view on each of the pitch, or play reactions to it, and just it's just absolutely out of this world. And the game itself wasn't obviously full of you know, great moments like that, but obviously another one being Kobbie Mainoo, made his full debut for Man United and came in and gave such an assured, mature performance for an 18-year-old to come onto the pitch and perform the way that he did. you know, it's not very often for me that you hear Roy Keane say absolutely brilliant about a player coming in and, you know, performing in the way that he did. But he looked like the most composed player on the pitch. And I think that speaks volumes about the player. He's been known to be a massive talent, you know, coming through that United Academy. And he's for him to come and do that on his full debut and just show what he's all about, just, it's absolutely amazing.
Just mentality and maturity, wasn't it? And I think that's what United needed, really. I don't want to go into United too much, but I think Miles, from an external point of view, the players that they had in this game were sort of, I feel like, the players that we need to give more of a chance to. Kobbie Mainoo being one of them. Garnacho could build a team around him, is that much of a talent. But I think also Pelistri as well. I think on the right-hand side, United have really struggled to find a player that can find form. But Pelistri, I think, is one of them players that could, if given the chance, be pretty decent.
Yeah, I completely agree, particularly with Garnacho. We've been saying it for a while. I keep saying I can't understand why he doesn't start every game on that left-hand side right now. He's clearly in better form than Rashford. He's the sort of person you want a future around. And the goal was phenomenal. I hate for it to sound like recency bias. I would go as far as saying, is that the best goal ever scored in the Premier League? Because the technique is outstanding. It's far better than Rooney's to me. Because Rooney's is great, but he's in the middle of the goal. Not to take anything away from it. Middle of the goal, 12 yards out. Garnacho has had to run backwards, full pelt, from basically the corner of the box and placed it that well. Like Dave mentioned, it's generous to give Dallow an assist for that. To be honest, that's the nature of an overhead kick, isn't it? The reason you've got to do an overhead kick is because the cross wasn't good enough, if we're honest. And he's really saved that one. Honestly, phenomenal goal from a phenomenal talent. And for United right now, when you're so concerned about the structure of the club and what they're doing and what they need to do, you need young players like Garnacho and Mainoo to come through and kind of build you back up. And actually, another player worth mentioning very quickly, because I know we weren't planning on talking about United, Martial. That's the kind of performance that we expected from Martial far more often than we see it. Like, he won the penalty very well. It was clever forward play to win the penalty. It definitely wasn't a dive. I thought it was ridiculous that that was given by the ref in the first place. And his goal, the composure, you don't expect that level of composure from a striker so out of form and so out of favour. But that was such a typical Martial kind of finish of Martial at his best. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I think that, as another stat as well, Martial and Rashford is now the most scored combination in a game together where they've both scored in United history, ahead of, I think, Van Nistelrooy and Scholes. They always scored in the same game together. I mean, they've had about 9 years to do it, to be fair. So, you know, it's not exactly a massive stat. I mean, but yeah, interesting.
Against Everton, I think that's his ninth goal he scored against Everton.
Okay.
Poor Everton.
I've written off Martial, to be fair. So yeah, fair play. He's proved a few doubters wrong, but he's had to. We've kind of relied on him for goals lately, haven't we? That's it for this week's pod, guys. Interesting chat with you as always. Keep tuned, actually, because we're still growing on our YouTube channel. If you want to hop over to there from wherever you're listening, we'd love to get you interacting on there and growing our subscriber count, really, because we're getting a lot of interactions with fans with different clubs on there, and that's kind of what we're all about. You know, whatever fan of whichever club you are, you know, you're welcome on our channel, because we try and include pretty much every Premier League club. And if you want to hear from your club as well, let us know, because, you know, there's certain clubs we like zooming in on because the interaction's better with you guys. So yeah, please do hop over to YouTube and check that out. And Dave, as always, mate, Glazers out. Take care.
See you next time.
See you soon.